Welcome back to EcoTalk. It's time now for our Partners Corner with the NRDC. The Natural Resources Defense Council has a wonderful publication called On Earth, and the spring issue has an article by journalist and author Lisa Sellen Davis about environmental activism in virtual space. It turns out that thousands of people who participate in the online virtual world called Second Life are engaging in environmental activism. Some of their efforts are limited to cyberspace, but some are spilling over into the real, physical world. On Earth senior editor Laura Wright spoke with Lisa Sellen Davis about the latest frontier of the green revolution.
For those of us who aren't really familiar with Second Life, would you take a minute just to fill us in on what it's all about?
Sure. Second Life is part of the world of MMORPGs, which are massive multiplayer online role-playing games. I think the most famous one is called World of Warcraft, and that one's quite different because clearly it's about war, and there's a lot of violence, and you sort of earn the equivalent of a black belt by going through all these trials and tribulations on it. But basically, there are communities, online communities of people, and you create what they call an avatar, an online version of yourself, and basically you go about this virtual world in the shell of that new self.
So, as you're meeting people and flying around or teleporting around or whoever you're getting from here to there, and you're coming across people who are doing social activism of one form or another, what kinds of things are they doing, and what kind of places what are you seeing as you're moving around?
Well, I went to several places. One was an island called Better World, which was a sort of networking hub of various causes. There I met this woman, Delia Lake, at the Center for Water Studies, who is probably their biggest accomplishment is that they've been working on this virtual ecosystem where you can click from a kind of clean water system to what it would look like with all kinds of pollutants or sort of post-global warming tragedy. And their idea is that they can reveal to people what's happening with global warming and with, ocean becoming more polluted in a way that they wouldn't ever get to by reading a book or, even watching An Inconvenient Truth. So they're using it as this experiential educational tool.
One of the sources for this piece was Marissa Orzak at Harvard University, and she's a psychologist who studies computer addiction. And she had a very interesting perspective on why it is that people become so attached to not just gaming, but virtual living and online networking. I guess I'd like to hear from you a little bit of kind of your own experience.
One of the things that Dr. Orzak talks about is that people have the opportunity to become their best selves in Second Life. And that means different things to different people. So for a lot of people on Second Life, that has to do with the way you look. But there's a whole class of people in Second Life who, while still being very good-looking, are also being their best selves in terms of their desire to improve the world. And that's partly what I was looking for.
So you met a lot of people in Second Life who are doing various things for the environment. From your conversations there, were these things necessarily carrying over into the real world? Or to some extent, was this just an obsession with virtual space?
There seem to be two versions of activism in Second Life. There were people trying to improve that virtual world, and there were people trying to harness the virtual world to improve the real world. I met people of both ilks there. Prokofi Neva, who started the Second Life Public Land Preserve, was interested in rescuing tracts of virtual land to keep it from being overdeveloped. And while he claims to be politically active in real life, he said that Second Life is the only place where he really participates in environmentalism. There were other avatars setting up shop there in the hopes that they could reach people they'd never be able to reach in the other world. And in fact, that's the promise of Second Life. And as skeptical as I was about how people could be participating in virtual activism and how that could affect the real world, what I came away with was that there are 3.5 million people bumming around in there who are going to encounter things they would never encounter in the real world. The Annenberg study that came out last year concluded that these virtual communities do lead to social activism, and that a huge percentage of people are introduced to causes online that they never would have found out about otherwise.
That was one of the things that I found most interesting about your piece. I found it amazing that, you know, of the 200 or so people who participated in the Edinburgh School's study, 44% said that they became more politically active after joining an online community, and 20% participate at least once a year in a real-life activity that mirrors their online endeavor. Maybe it's pie in the sky, but it does make me hopeful that, you know, it could very well be that someone bumps into NEVA's public land trust, and maybe NEVA's not taking that into the real world, but maybe some fuzzy bunny, the real-life brain behind him, will.
That's the best version of what can happen with environmental activism in Second Life. The idea that people can encounter causes and care about them in Second Life that they wouldn't have otherwise, and that they can take that with them outside of Second Life, is the promise of that kind of online community. The problem, potentially, is that people spend sometimes 40 hours a month participating in these online communities. And the question is, will they have time and energy left for real-life work? And I think that's what remains to be seen.
Thank you, Lisa, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you both. And next, we have a book called East Wind Melts the Ice. We'll chat with the author in studio.